Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. At a council meeting on February 28th, Coburg politicians approved a bylaw to regulate the operations, safety, and security for emergency shelters. The most notable impact will be on Cornerstone Family Violence Prevention Center and Transition House. In particular, the bylaw is meant to address concerns over the new shelter planned for 310 Division Street, a former seniors' residence. It was purchased by the county and recently received $2.5 million from the Ontario government for renovations. During a special county council meeting on March 6th, Coburg Mayor Lucas Cleveland passionately defended his municipality's decision. In this interview, he will explain what the town is trying to achieve. He will also respond to criticisms on all sides. Cleveland believes this bylaw is a template for other municipalities across Ontario. He will make his case. You decide if he is right. I am so pleased to have with me today Coburg Mayor Lucas Cleveland. Welcome back to Consider This Northumberland.
Thank you very much, Mr. Washburn. Always a pleasure. I love engaging with good journalism.
Thank you very much. How would you characterize the current situation between Northumberland County and the town of Coburg as it pertains to 310 Division Street?
I think it's great. Wow, what a start to the interview, Mr. Washburn. I would characterize the relationship between Northumberland County and Coburg as very traditional and expected when you have a situation like this, because each level of government is looking after a different group of citizens, and each level of government has a different set of responsibilities. Therefore, each level of government has a very different perspective on 310 Division. So I would say that the relationship is exactly the way it should be. It's not sunshine and roses, and it's not in any way, shape, or form a conflict. It is simply a traditional relationship between an upper tier and the largest lower tier within its borders.
All right. That's a good answer, but maybe you could elaborate a little bit more on what does that mean in real terms as it pertains to 310 Division.
Okay, well, I can perhaps maybe reflect it as to my, as making it a little easier and speaking to sort of my distinct position as being someone on the upper tier and on the lower tier, and how I'm having to navigate two very difficult and very different positions. So at the Northumberland County, everyone will recall that when 310 Division was proposed, I was the first one standing up and cheering. I voted very much in support of the purchase of 310. So Northumberland County is, in a sense, Northumberland County has heard the residents of Coburg. They're understanding that our current shelter system, as the old transition house, motel program, and warming room, wasn't doing the job that it was meant to do. And I think 310 to Northumberland County was an incredible opportunity to sort of solve all the problems and to sort of move in the right direction that they'd heard from both the residents of Coburg and those on the left side of the political spectrum wanted and needed. And I was overjoyed at the opportunity to move in that direction. In Coburg, I say that we have the same position. We understand in Coburg that there is an issue with homelessness in our community. I would say Coburg, its elected officials and its residents know that better than anybody. We've been dealing with the encampment. We're dealing with the encampment since the summer on the beach. And so in Coburg, we're also excited about the increase in services, about the potentiality of a place like 310 Division. The difference is that the county doesn't have the lived experience of putting up with what that looks like within its community. And Coburg does. And so there's going to be an automatic sort of difference, because Coburg has the concern for not only its most vulnerable, but also the community around a shelter service. Whereas Northumberland County, they're not so focused on just Coburg. They're focused on the entirety of Northumberland County, and they're looking at it from a bigger perspective as, we need to do shelter services, so here's a new shelter.
The county has legislative responsibilities for dealing with homelessness. They fund and oversee the contracts with homeless service providers, in this case, Transition House. The town, yourself included, have argued in the past that homelessness is a county issue, and we're happy to turn the problem over to them. Why is it so different now that you find it necessary to pass bylaws to govern emergency shelters?
Oh, wow. That's a great but leading question. So I'm gonna back it up and sort of talk about that question. You said, mentioned first that Coburg has been pushing that it's a county responsibility. I want to be very clear. That's not a Coburg council position. That's a legal position. We've gone to the legal experts to make sure and to understand what is and isn't within our jurisdiction. I'm actually going to take a step further here, Mr. Washburn, and say, you know what? I would say that because Coburg Council has from day one of this new term insisted to its residents, to the advocates, to those who want to see an improvement for our most vulnerable, Coburg has held a line and said, we want it too, but we all have to go to the county to do this. And I would actually argue that it's because of Coburg Council holding that line and redirecting all of the issues, redirecting all of the complaints, redirecting all of the feedback to the county that has actually created the opportunity and the appetite for 310. So I don't think that Coburg Council is any way, shape, or form advocating, or sorry, reducing its responsibility. I think they're part and parcel of why 310 Division has happened, because
I think you've misunderstood my question, because I was very clear. All I said was that you argued in the past that homelessness was a county issue, and you just said that. So I don't see where the problem is. But what I'm talking about, and let's be specific here now, is why is it necessary, then, if it's a county responsibility, that Coburg Town Council feels it needs to pass bylaws to govern emergency shelters?
Well, because no other governments are stepping up to the plate to do what's right, sir. If we look at long-term care homes as a classic example, okay, long-term care homes would be much more effectively run and more profitable with less rules and regulations. We learned in the pandemic what happens when we put seniors in buildings together without appropriate protections, safety mechanisms, and a plan of action. And unfortunately, we lost a lot of our good seniors.
But town council didn't pass any bylaws to impact seniors' residences. So what I'm asking you, let's go back to the original question. Why is it necessary for Coburg Council to pass bylaws to govern emergency shelters? Pretty straightforward.
Because it's the right thing to do. Because no one else has stepped up to do it, sir. Okay. The reality is that what we're asking is very basic and very simple. We're not even trying to tell the providers and the experts how to care for our most vulnerable. We're not trying to dictate what the rules are. What we are saying is, here's a base standard that from the last 5 years of community experience that our community expects. We're setting very basic rules into place. And that's why I'm talking about long-term care homes, because I'll be honest, if it was a situation where long-term care homes in Coburg weren't regulated and didn't have bylaws and rules in place, we would be stepping to the plate to that. But thankfully, the provincial government has already done that. You see, Mr. Walker,
wouldn't it
this
not
is
be
the
possible?
First bylaw.
But isn't it possible then, Mr. Cleveland, that you could just go to the county and say, hey, guys, you need to pass these bylaws. We expect in Coburg, we expect this, we expect this, we expect this. You guys passed some bylaws. Why was it necessary for the town to do it rather than work with the county to have them do it, which is their responsibility.
I mean, I can't speak for the county, Mr. Washburn. I'm just one of seven members. So that's a great question to ask either the warden or the staff of the county. What I can say is that considering the reaction to this bylaw, considering the reluctance to enter into an agreement with Coburg, considering all of the things we've experienced in Coburg over the last 5 years, there is no appetite from either the staff or the county to enact a bylaw. Also, under the municipal code, it's not on the county to enact bylaws within the jurisdiction of Coburg. I want to be very clear about that. So, you know what, Mr. Washburn, if we had had a different experience, and if we had understood the situation, and as I said, there weren't a lot of bylaws governing long-term care homes until after the pandemic. It was after the pandemic that the government finally stepped in and had learned its lesson, unfortunately, at the cost of lives for our seniors. And those rules were then put in place post that experience. And so this isn't uncommon practice for us to learn, improve, and make changes to our rules to prevent things from happening that we know have happened in the past. In fact, that's good governance. So the reason this bylaw was passed is because it's, again, the right thing to do to protect our most vulnerable. And I think it's really important that we look at it from that angle. We're not here trying to govern individuals. We can look at examples where communities have, whether it's the tenting bylaw that was passed in Kingston or the attempt to remove a shelter in Waterloo. We can see governments legislating people, and we're very well aware here in Coburg that that's not an appropriate use of power. Section 7 protects these people. And I think it's important that we look at what this bylaw is doing. It's looking to protect the individuals that will use 310 Division to ensure that they receive a great standard of care and that they are safe and protected and can show up in knowing that they're going to receive that standard of care.
But idea. But explain to me then, if that's the case, why is it necessary then for having pick up garbage and keep the area clean? Why is it necessary to make board members personally liable if your goal is to protect the users of the facility? So how does that work?
It's called accountability. So the reason we want to hold the board members accountable is because if you're going to sit on the board of directors for a nonprofit, you have a set of responsibilities. Those responsibilities carry with them consequences. Well, they didn't, and now they do. And I think it's important that we understand that most boards of directors for both corporate and nonprofit already carry a burden of responsibility, and that the fines set out aren't being set out by Coburg. This is standard practice in law, and it would be for a judge to decide if those fines are appropriate, not Coburg.
I think it makes sense, though, that board members have liability for the individuals when they're within the facility. But your bylaw goes and says, well, when they're offsite. So if they're downtown,
I have to push back. That's not actually true, sir. What it does is it allows for the possibility. So let's look at one example. We know that there's a program for free lunches. We know that Transition House currently has that program. And we know that what happens is without being responsible, like what they do is they just give the lunches. And then sure enough, the next day we find those packages of lunches all over the community. So this bylaw would then allow us to go and say, hey, this can't happen. When you're issuing free lunches, let's make sure we have garbage bins provided. Let's make sure there's receptacles there. Let's make sure all of these things happen. So it allows us to actually ensure that the ramifications of the actions at the place aren't felt throughout the community. Again, this is standard. We do that with bars. We do that with all sorts of businesses in our community, where we make sure that if they're doing something that is creating a ripple effect through the community, that we have ways and means of holding them to account to do better. So again, this isn't about the individuals using the sheltering services. It's about holding the people who provide services to those folks to account to ensure they're doing the best job they can for our most vulnerable and for our community as a whole. So I think it's really, really important that we focus on the intentionality behind this bylaw. I would have loved not to have to have Coburg be the one to step up and do this. I would love to live in a community where we don't have these kind of issues. But that's not the reality of the current world we live in. And the current reality is that we have 5 years of lived experience of what that looks like. And so we have listened to our most vulnerable, the ones that I visit at the encampment, the ones that come here and talk to me. And they share with me all of the difficulties they have with the current operations of shelter services. So again, this bylaw hasn't just been pulled out of thin air. This is something that has been in the works for months. And it's not just something that like we came up with because of 310. We can talk to counselors. When I first took office, I would say 95% of the emails we're receiving as elected officials have to do with the delivery of social services in our community. And so I guarantee I'm not alone. I'm sure every other counselor on my council has been thinking of ways to mitigate and to do better in our community. And this bylaw is an incredible opportunity to sort of stand up and say, hey, this is what we need. And I'm fully in support of it. And I think it's interesting because no one would ever, ever have an issue with rules and regulations that protect the lives of our senior population. Yes, it makes life more difficult as someone who sits on the county and has learned of all the new provincial regulations that are very, very intentional and very expensive to provide. I'm aware that it's not very easy to always meet these regulations, but that doesn't mean they're not important to protect our seniors. Similarly, I can understand.
Before you get going too far afield, I'd like to just come back for a moment to this idea of personal liability, because you must have a sense that this is going to impact the ability of these shelters to attract board members or volunteers.
And no, I don't, Mr. Washburn. I
don't disagree. Think that's going to be the case.
No, I think
this was pointed out at the county in a presentation.
Yes, but
also Transition House, when they did their presentation to the county, said this was an issue.
So maybe we should be getting board members that actually are ready to do the work that's required of being a board member. Maybe we're going to start attracting board members that understand that you don't just get to sit on a board to put on your resume. That when you're part of a board of a nonprofit, that requires work, effort, intentionality, and a hard work and commitment to the organization with which board you're sitting on, which means you should have a vested interest and you should be held to account if you're not doing a good job overseeing the organization of which you're a board member. I sit on multiple boards now in my role. That's part of the job. That's what I signed up for in this role. There are people who sit on boards of lakefront utilities who have chosen to sit on that board. And they're expected to do a good job. And if they don't, they also can be held financially liable and responsible for the poor actions of that utility. So this, again, this idea that it's going to be hard to attract board members. Well, yeah, it's going to be hard to attract board members that don't want to do their job and don't want any responsibility. But it's not going to be hard to attract individuals that are committed to the work. And I really take umbrage with the fact that, oh, well, it's going to be hard to attract board members. Yeah, well, it's hard to attract good quality people all the time in all the roles. Like, that's not an argument for not doing the right thing. It's just, that's just an offshoot of it's actually showing that it is doing the right thing because we're going to be recruiting board members that understand there's a responsibility in that role. So yeah, I don't like, yes, the county has said that, but just because the county has said it doesn't make it factually accurate. And just because they said it's going to be harder, which it might be, doesn't mean it's not the right thing to do. It makes sure people will be responsible and it makes sure that people will actually maybe take their job seriously as a board member and ensure that the policies, the practices, and the impact both for the residents inside and the community at large are mitigated.
So
that's what we want.
When you were drafting up this bylaw, can you describe the level of consultation you held with both emergency shelters, Transition House and Cornerstone Family Violence Prevention Center, regarding those prior to their passage?
Yeah, no, I can't give you that because I didn't draft the bylaw. No one on our council did. What our staff did is exactly that. So yeah, our staff works with legal experts. Our staff worked within the municipal code, and our staff used the tools available to us to craft a bylaw. This is not, there's a standard practice. Bylaws have to have 7 major components. They have to have certain characteristics. There's like, it's Drafting a bylaw is something that is regular, common, and always happens. So this isn't a new practice for us. Now you're asking how much engagement was given with the agencies. Well, that's why we didn't enact the bylaw right away at Cobert Council. That's why we pushed that bylaw back for that month. That's why we moved the date from which that bylaw would be implemented, because we wanted to give that opportunity. And since then, we've done that. So we've received correspondence from the county requesting some alterations and some modifications. We've responded, and we don't believe we actually need to provide any exemptions as they've requested, but we've definitely heard their concerns and are modifying the language to clarify it as per the county requests. Since then, we've had both Transition House Board and Cornerstone Board into the building as an executive and have spoken with our legislative service department, and they've been going over some of that language. And so the reason we created that space is exactly what you're talking about. We wanted to get that engagement. We wanted this bylaw's coming, but we're going to push it off a month. We're going to make sure there's an opportunity to engage, talk, to flag the problems. And we've had that. And what's really interesting is that once the clerks sort of dispelled a lot of the myths that have been spreading around the community, we were showing the executive of Cornerstone and the executive Transition House about how this bylaw will actually be a tool for them. How now they have an ability to call in the community for help when it's needed without having to go to the police. You see, what this bylaw has done is it's allowed this to be dealt with as a bylaw and not a criminal matter. What a great opportunity, as we've learned, that the most vulnerable are often triggered and often traumatized from interactions with the law, with police officers. And a lot of the behaviors and a lot of the issues we have in our community aren't a legal issue. They're a little bit of loitering. There's garbage places. There's carts left places. There is noise complaints. We shouldn't be using a sledgehammer to fix something that requires a screwdriver. And by instituting this bylaw, it's going to give the management at these care facilities a different set of tools to use to help them mitigate their problems. So again, it's sometimes the same coin. It's just deciding what side you want to look at. This bylaw has actually been starting to be accepted as, oh, well, this is actually what's needed. In fact, I gave a lecture to PhD policy students about it. I'm probably going to be going to Ottawa to speak about it. This is the first of its kind, as far as we can tell, in Canada. And instead of this bylaw being looked at as an incredible step forward to protect our most vulnerable, it's interesting how it's being spun as a way of trying to regulate or control them. That's not the intentionality here at all.
Well, since you're talking about that, you've accused the county of disseminating misinformation and stoking a fear in the community. Can you describe how that has happened?
Okay, well, that's my personal opinion. I want to be very clear and careful as we proceed. This isn't the opinion of Cobert Council, nor is it the opinion of County Council. So this is Lucas Cleveland as an individual making that accusation, just to sort of clear the notes. So I won't get into the details of the specific moments, but there was a report issued by the county about how our emergency care bylaw would somehow create confusion around the solar eclipse and emergency respite centers. That concern was shared with Cobert. Cobert staff immediately explained and provided a clear legal explanation to why that doesn't actually apply and why that isn't a concern. However, those responses from Cobert staff to county staff, while being arrived in time for the county meeting, were not presented with the report that the county reported on. And so we were led to believe that this is an issue at the county, whereas there was clear documented proof from both Cobert staff and legal teams that that's not actually the case. And that wasn't presented in a timely manner with the report given to county council. The other issue is around sort of how the county is using the concerns of Cobert residents and somehow linking them to the concerns of Cobert council and staff. That's two separate things. So the community as a large has come to Cobert council and provided all kinds of recommendations and all kinds of ideas. A few of them good, a lot of them either not legal or not appropriate. So what we did as a council at Cobert was we took all of the community recommendations and we gave them to staff and said, hey, you guys know the law. You understand what is and isn't appropriate to ask. Could you come back to the council with a series of asks that would appease our community? And then our staff took those asks and met with the county staff. However, the county staff didn't just respond and the issues of Coburg staff. They also went to lengths to dismiss all of the asks of the community. But those weren't our asks at the Coburg level. And so the accusation I made was that they were spinning this big pile of asks as if it's what Coburg was asking to try and make it seem like Coburg was asking for the moon, where what we were asking for is very basic sets of understanding, community liaisons, and a possibility of holding people to account. Again, Mr. Washburn, we don't want, the goal here is an incredible shelter service. The goal here is to provide a quality level of care for our most vulnerable. I mean, look okay. at corner.
So let's just move on for a second. The bylaws contain some pretty stiff fines that can range up to $100,000. You're also in the bylaws demanding $2 million in liability assurance. These are costs that are going to have to be borne by the shelter operations. Have you not got a fear that maybe you're legislating these people out of business because of additional costs?
No, Mr. Washburn. In fact, I want to be very clear. $2 million is the lowest. So when I ran a taco truck at the beach canteen, I had to carry a $3 million liability. That's a single person business at the beach. The town required a $3 million liability. So that's standard. In fact, this is actually a discount from the town's normal asks for businesses operating. Most businesses operating within the town of Coburg to get your license, you're carrying between $3 and $4 million of liability insurance. So again, that's actually a very understanding liability. And when you talk about the fines for the directors between, you know, 10 and 100,000, that's Canadian law. That's standard practice. And so again, that's not for Coburg to ever decide. We don't set the fines for these individuals. That would be in front of a judge. So it would have to go a long way down this bylaw path. There would have to be repeated offenses. There would have to be intentionality. There would have to be a clear and present criminal element to not following the rules before we would ever get to the allocation of those kinds of fines. And from what we can discover, there's never been a case in Canada where a judge has leveled a $100,000 fine on a board member. So again, when we talk about the spinning of stories, when we talk about the fear-mongering, when we start talking about $100,000 fines as if it's like common practice or that we're trying to penalize board members, no, this is part of what we talked about when you draft a bylaw. One of the things about the bylaw is you have to have a set of escalating penalties and they have to be clearly outlined. We didn't create those. We literally took them from other rules.
So you've alluded to a period where you've been in consultation and you've been talking to the county. Can you bring us up to speed as to how close you are to getting all of this sorted out? Because I understand that March 28th is the date when this bylaw goes into effect.
Mm-hmm. And so I think there's two topics we're talking about here. So far in this interview, Mr. Washburn, we've been speaking specifically as to the bylaw. We can also talk about an agreement. And those are two separate issues we're talking about here. So I can't get to the details of the agreement because in order to try and remove the politics, if you will, from this agreement, what we've asked is that at the county level, we've asked the CAO to meet with the Coburg CAO and to get it staff to staff. So what we've sort of done at the county level is we've empowered our CAO there to meet with the CAO of Coburg. And in Coburg Council, we've empowered the CAO at Coburg to meet with the CAO. And our hope is that we can get the political out of this. I think both levels of government realize that this is a good thing in our community. I think both levels of government realize that this is very much needed in our community. And I'm actually really proud that both levels of government kind of understood that this shouldn't necessarily be a political fight, that what this should be is our staffs finding common ground so that our most vulnerable are best served. So that's where we're at. We've gotten feedbacks on both sides. Just like any agreement, you're almost there until you're there. And at any moment, things can go awry. But from what I understand is we actually agree on most things. There's a few details to be worked out, but that agreement is forthcoming, and that agreement has absolutely nothing to do with the bylaw.
So come hell or high water, March 28th, that bylaw goes into effect.
No, no, that's up to the vote of council. But from what I can understand, if I read the room, that yes, like right now, that bylaw comes into effect, and it would require a motion at council to push that bylaw off further off. It would require maybe a staff recommendation, et cetera.
Is there any chance that's going to happen, or is this going to go forward on the 28th as you have passed?
I'm believing that it will go forward. As I said, as we've sort of dug into this and as we've been learning about this and as we've sort of been exploring the environment of this bylaw, the feedback is incredible. The reality is that this should not be falling to a small 20,000 person lower tier municipality to finally be setting rules and regulations that take care of our most vulnerable. I mean, it's a sad state of affairs in the sense that we're relying on the tiny municipality of Cobourg to set a standard of care for our most vulnerable in the province of Ontario. And so it is what it is. I'm not in a place to tell you what the council is planning, because that's wonderful thing about the council is that we can make decisions on the fly on the floor. I know I'm very much in support of this bylaw because this bylaw is here to care for our most vulnerable. I've heard
what they're saying. You've said that a number of times, but it also is going to look after the downtown business people that are concerned. It looks after all the residents that have concerns and want to see it work. I mean, it's not just, I know you keep saying that it's for them, and I think that's fantastic, but it also impacts everybody, the police. I mean, there's a whole bunch of people that are going to be impacted by this bylaw. It's not just for the people in the encampment or the homeless.
I have to push back. If it were up to, say, the businesses around 310, they don't want a bylaw. They don't want a shelter in their community. If it was up to a large swath of, say, people in our community, and if you read the letters, they don't care about a bylaw. They just don't want 310 division, and they don't want any services in Cobourg any longer. Okay. There's a large movement in Cobourg that are pretty upset that we live in a 2,000 square kilometer community, and yet all of the social services are almost all centered into one town. So again, I don't think that this bylaw is going to actually appease a lot of people in our community. I think what would appease a lot of people in our community would be some extremes that I can't agree with. We need shelter services. We need to care for our most vulnerable. So I don't really pay heed to some of the people that don't share those opinions, because I'm in the position both at the county and at Cobourg to know we do need to do a better job. So again, I'd like to sort of go back for a second when you talked about county and Cobourg and that friction. That when it comes to caring for our most vulnerable, there is no friction. How we go about doing that maybe has a bit of a difference of opinion, whereas the county doesn't think this and we think that, but it's unanimous. There isn't a single level of government that doesn't think that it's our job to provide care and quality care to those individuals in our community. And to your point, really good rules and regulations should take the entire community into account. And I think that's what we actually need to start seeing more of in government and in our Canadian law, is that we're not, I'm going to get philosophical here on you, and I hope you're okay with that. Thank you. We have a utilitarian style system, which is, of course, for those who maybe aren't familiar, it's the greatest good for the most. That's what we're setting up for. Now, there's a problem in a utilitarian style system of government. And that problem is that oftentimes minorities and individual rights can be run over. And so our Canadian government under the 1980s came in with our Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And that was a great balancing act to the utilitarian democracy government. My personal belief lately is that our judicial system and our judicial decisions are unfortunately overweighting the individual rights at the expense of the greatest good for the greatest number. And I think what you're starting to see is that rebalancing happening. And I think this example of this bylaw is a great example of a perfect balance. We're looking at a rules and regulations that both understand that a shelter is part of a greater good in the community, while also respecting the individual rights of those individuals, because we're not meant to govern individuals. We're not meant to write bylaws to individuals. We are to write bylaws to institutions, and we are supposed to be regulating sort of the operation of our community as a whole.
And we've been watching you at the county level, at the Coburg Council level, and your public comments. You've been pretty strong in your defense of these bylaws and going forward and their necessity. Are you concerned at all that you have created a divide between Coburg and the county? Have you damaged at all relationships and your role at the county and at the town that might be a problem in the future?
It's a tough question. And I think that's a question you'd have to maybe ask some of my counterparts at the county. However, I just want to sort of make sure I'm going to say this appropriately and correctly. I think it's about time that Coburg stood up for itself. I think it's about time that Coburg got the respect it deserves at the county. If me standing up for the citizens of Coburg and demanding that the county do better for those citizens has ruptured relationships, well, so be it. People would often call my style of leadership and my style of public engagement as polarizing and disrupting. It's really important for a healthy life and a happy life to accept who you are as a person. I understand that the way I communicate, I understand that the things I say can be very, very polarizing. I understand that the things I say are often misinterpreted. Things like the bus is a luxury that Coburg should be grateful for. Many in the community decided that that was some way, somehow, me wanting to defund transportation. But what it was bringing attention to an issue that we all needed to talk about. And then since that comment, if you look at the public record, there are almost 7 different voting opportunities where I've stood for an increase in public transportation. So saying things and doing things to create momentum, to create a reaction, to create a change is, in a sense, the job of an elected leader. Now, not everyone takes that job this way. A lot of people think that the job of elected leader is to get along and to make sure we're, and in a sense, that is. But again, when I took this office, when I've ever taken any leadership position, the first 3 months, you act like a sponge. And what you do is you absorb everything and you say nothing and you maybe poke a little here and there, but what you're doing is absorbing. And what I absorbed in the first 3 months as Coburg mayor was that 98 to 99% of every email I receive from a citizen with an issue or a complaint was directly linked to a program or service that is provided by the county. And so as a Coburg mayor, I went to my council and said, hey, why are we spinning our wheels trying to fix homelessness with a $30 million budget when the county has $350 million? Why are we listening to all of these people complain to us about problems that we can't fix? Why aren't we making it very clear and specific that if you've got problems with social services, come to me with the county and let's go to the county and let's talk about it up there. And so when you ask, is there a friction? Well, of course there's a friction. We're redirecting the complaints of Coburg citizens to the level of government that they haven't been talking to for the last several years. And so I'm sure there are many individuals at the county who aren't happy with me. But again, just like the board members that might not be happy that I'm making them responsible for the job they're supposed to do, I'm not going to lose sleep over making sure that Coburg complaints and concerns are being told to the level of government that is supposed to be spoken to. And I'll just sort of summarize by the sort of wrap this all up here, Mr. Washburn. When I was elected, I didn't make any promises. I promised 3 things. I said I promised I'd build teams. I said I'd work for accountability and transparency. And I said I'd make lots of mistakes, but that I'd make them with the right intention and learn from it. And so when you talk about the communication, when you talk about how sort of out there I am, I've had to learn how to pivot my communication and how not to sort of antagonize, but to sort of allude to and bring to light issues that we're not talking about. We weren't talking about the 10 or 11 drug houses in our community. We started talking about them and we started working on those problems. We need to talk about the things that we think are problems, and we need to talk about the problems with the right levels of government if we want to see changes. And so this is the 310 is the example of exactly what we want to happen. We redirect the public persona, we redirect the public complaints to the level of government that is responsible for it. That level of government hears the complaints finally and goes, oh, we better fix this. And then we start seeing purchases like 310 Division. This is actually, I believe, the job I've been elected to do. And it's not my job to be liked. My job is to look out for the residents of Cobourg and make the best decisions and make the right choices to ensure that all levels of government, all people that are participating in this thing we call politics, are making ethically right decisions, that they're accountable and transparent to their public. And if I have to be the bad guy in order to make that happen, then that's a job I will do with honor and that I will be proud to do. Look at Mr. Mulrooney. Look at the incredible things that are being said about Mr. Mulrooney, about how he was a nation builder and how he worked so hard to communicate. I remember when Mr. Mulrooney was a prime minister, and he was one of the most polarizing and divisive prime ministers, I would say, of my lifetime. And yet here we are so many years later with the community in thanks because he brought so many divisive, crazy policies forward that really ended up being what this country needed. And so I'm not worried about my personal reputation. I'm not worried about whether I'm going to get reelected or not. What I am worried about is every morning when I show up to work, when I'm faced with a decision, that I actually make the right decision, no matter what the community thinks about. And so with this bylaw, I fundamentally believe it's the right decision.
That brings me to my next question, which is, how much pressure are you under personally to resolve the concerns surrounding 310 Division Street? What price are you personally paying to navigate these waters?
Now we're really getting into the philosophy here, sir. Let's talk about just, I'm going to say something and then we'll get into my personal issues. When you look at the political world in 2024, we see a polarization. We see, you know, the far, far left and the far, far right. And as we've been magnifying through social media algorithms, unfortunately, the average Canadian viewpoint in that sort of middle zone is not being spoken to. So what happens is these two far viewpoints attack anyone that's not on their side. And as politicians, it's really hard to stand in the middle of no-go zone and get attacked by both the right and the left. It's really, really difficult. So personally, whether it's people boycotting my business or my ex-wife's business, whether it's personal insults, slander, libel, whether it's people showing up and threatening me in the office, whether it's a reduction of relationships at different levels of government, whether it's not returning emails and calls, there's a lot of consequences of doing the right thing. But doing the right thing is not supposed to be easy. Doing the right thing is often the hardest thing to do. And so what I say is that a lot of politicians get into politics to serve the majority of our community, and that's in the middle. It might be a little this way, it might be a little this way, but it's all in the middle. And the problem is when you're in the public life and you're standing in the middle, you're getting sniped by both sides of the extreme. And so as a politician, for survivability, for longevity, I'm now very empathetic to other politicians who maybe pick a side that they don't necessarily fulsomely believe in. Because by choosing a side, you only have to deal with the onslaught and the attacks from one side. I'm going to give a little sort of insight to sort of how I reflect upon the decisions we make as a council. When we make a decision as a council and we hear the far left screaming at us as it's the worst decision ever, and those screams are at the same and equal level as those on the far right, I consider it a good decision. Because when both extremes are upset with that decision, there's a good chance that the majority of Canadians support it. And I think that says something about how polarized our political dialogue has actually gotten.
Once these bylaws go into effect on March 28th, what's next?
Absolutely not. And I think that's really important that we say. Bylaws take time to be adopted. Bylaws are not going, it's not like on the day after the bylaw, we're going to be sending bylaw officers to every care shelter. It's where you start the period of education, of involvement. You start working, you start talking, you communicate, you work towards. I had a great conversation with the warden, Brian. And Brian and I have found a way to just sort of get through this, to have great communication, to understand, and I think that's really important to point out there that there's going to be friction, but that doesn't mean that us as elected officials, we can't work together. I think that's what separates professionals from sort of the outlying advocates on either side. Professionals understand that we're supposed to disagree. I look at my deputy mayor and I say, you know, here's two people with very sort of differing viewpoints on a lot of different issues. Yet we always have great conversations in the office, and we have great conversations across the council floor. And it's in those conversations and it's in that compromise that the majority of our community will be served. So when I look at this and when we talk about this, Brian, myself, Mandy, all of the wonderful people around that table, yeah, we definitely have great dialogue. But at the end of the day, we're all doing what we're doing in life because we really care about our community. So nothing's going to happen. What's going to happen is that bylaw will come into effect and life will go on. And as a community, we will slowly start adopting that bylaw. We'll start working with it. It's not like it's going to necessarily affect any of the shelter services as it stands. It is a tool that should things not improve, should things get deteriorate, should there be problems, we now have methodology of correcting those problems. And that's really the intention here. The intention is not, and this is why I'm really proud of Coburg and our staff, we're staying out of operations. What we are doing is setting a baseline of what expectations this community has for any emergency care shelter in our jurisdiction. And I look forward to it. And I think what you're going to see, I mean, I'm going to make a prediction here. I bet you're going to see this bylaw start to get adopted across the province because this is good policy. This is actually what our most vulnerable need, which is levels of government mandating a standard of care that should be expected and that they deserve. No one, and I mean no one, would argue that we shouldn't have criminal record checks for volunteers in our children's sports. Yet when I suggest that we have accountability for volunteers in a shelter, I'm labeled as if I'm trying to attack volunteers. No, I'm making sure that the volunteers going into the shelter are doing so with the right intention, with the right background, with like we have to protect our most vulnerable. And it's just interesting that we see people on, say, the left side of the political spectrum advocating for more rules, more regulations around long-term care homes. Yet they're the ones fighting those exact same rules and regulations for our most vulnerable.
Lucas Cleveland, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
And I want to say thank you because we need more journalism. We need more back and forth like the ones we have. And thank you for the time and effort you put into this, because the more people talking about the important issues, the better the society has as a chance in moving in the right direction.
Thank you very much. That's very kind.
Thank you, sir. Have a good day.
That was Coburg Mayor Lucas Cleveland. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.